Welcome to our home at Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked. I am Rochelle Alicia Strider.
And I am Errol Strider.
We've invited you over tonight for some conversation, a few laughs, spiritual opinions, and as many surprises as possible. Since only our innocence can truly be surprised, please bring it with you.
Our time to you tonight is brought to you by Go Raw. Natural food, healthy food, crunchy, munchy food, good for you food. And you can find it at Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, Costco, and online. Go Raw, www.goraw. And we're so grateful that they are and continue to be our sponsor and have been, guess what? For 1 year, a year ago, January 7th, we started doing our new radio show format, Insight Out the Naked Truth from Lupin Lodge.
No, we took about a couple of month hiatus.
No, a year, probably a year. We did a show.
No, I mean here we took a hiatus.
Oh, the summer,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we took a hiatus here and then came back, and we've been playing a lot, and finally we just realized we want you to come visit us.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've ever taken a hiatus, but they're slow, and sometimes you need more than one of them, and hiatuses are expensive, and unlike most things, you cannot get a hiatus online. You know, but you can call in here to our program and we will send you your own autographed hiatus.
Oh, God. Speaking of it that way, it sounds so weird. I can't begin to.
Well,
tell
it's
you
all weird. That's
how
the
weird.
That's the whole point of our program is that looked at from a particular different angles, our life here is really kind of weird. I mean, just the fact that we're like this spinning globule of tiny bit of matter way out in the middle of like everything, space, vastness, then there's this planet, and then there's this ingredients on the planet, like water and elements and moving, then it starts moving, and then before you know it, it's making decisions, and it's online shopping for hiatuses.
You don't have to shop for hiatuses. That's
all right,
it.
Right.
You can take them whenever you want. Because you take them, you don't have to buy them.
That's right.
You can take them.
And that brings up another interesting question. What of the things that you can buy can really make you happy?
A good bed.
A good bed, like an ongoing kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that one of the nicest investments we made at one time was getting a really, really good mattress. I slept so well. You know, and now I can sleep just about on anything, which is weird, because I really thought that it was the mattress that made me sleep well, but I think
I did
it was the
too
thought of the mattress.
This is what you learn by taking a hiatus. You realize that it's the thought of the mattress that really counts, which lends credence to what they're always saying. It's the thought that counts.
You can think of anything. You don't have to buy anything.
But why does thought count if it's the thought that counts? I think that's a worthy subject for our exploration tonight.
Yeah, but when people talk about the thought that counts, they're talking about that you thought a nice thing. You might not have followed through with it. You didn't do it. Or what happened was it got messed up. The doing messed up the thought.
Right.
But the thought counted, so therefore they will ignore the doing messy stuff that you created out of the thought.
Because the thought counted.
The thought counted.
Thank you for stepping up, thought, and counting the way you do. Thinking, thought. Oh, my goodness, does that open up a whole
bunch
of thoughts?
Well, the only thing that I'm dealing with today is having a cold. It seems to have taken over my entire mechanism, which is my being, my thinking, my feeling, everything. It's sort of everything. It feels like I'm underwater, and it's coming through at a totally different vibrational thing, whatever. I don't even know what I'm saying. It's a very strange thing. It reminds me of my mortality more than anything, you know, when my body is just not responding the way I want it to. It's kind of like, and I'm trying not to resist it and just being with it and allowing it to be cold.
Driven, right.
Having a cold. I start coughing or sneezing at inappropriate moments. People come in and they start talking and they seem like they're so far away and their voice, they speak and their voice seems to come from them later.
That's funny.
I've been that way all day. I've been just watching people and going, well, it's me. I know it's me because I have a cold, but everybody seems like they're coming through at another decibel reading.
Speaking of cold, this is a little poem I wrote many years ago, and we've actually performed it.
I love it.
And it's called Germ, and here it goes. A little germ knelt down to pray one day. Yes, he supplicated in the human way. Why should a tiny germ drop to his knees? Because on this day, he'd started to sneeze. What a calamity for germ to bear. To tell the truth, it was quite a scare. For up to now, he'd been so brash and bold, but on this day, he caught himself a cold. He knew all too well the effects of this ill. He'd even resorted to taking a pill. But as a germ could only know best, the virus he'd caught would be quite a pest. Never did he think this would happen to him. Oh, the prospects, to be sure, were very, very grim. Our germ knew how bad a cold could be, for he himself was a cold germ, you see. How ironic this is, the little germ thought. Then I carried colds, but now it's the cold that I've caught. Little did I think when I took this position that someday I would need a physician. But no doctor could help him, he realized too late. To suffer and sneeze and sniffle was his fate. He'd caused many to suffer throughout his career. Why should they help me? He had reason to fear. So there he was, kneeling down that day, having no other hope. He began to pray. His request was answered before he could sneeze. The cold was gone as he fell to his knees.
Wow.
So long, he ran out of tears, just a worn-out man, looking for a healing hand. Then one day his chance came along, a healing man who can make him strong. And he called his eyes, but his question took him by surprise. Do you want to be well? Do you wanna be free? Really wanna be free? would be well. Are you willing to take up your mat and help yourself? Do you want to be free? Really want to be free? If you want to be healed and whole, you gotta want to be well. If you want to be healed and whole, you gotta want to be well.
Provocative little song. Who wrote that?
That was by Gather Vocal Band. The Gather Vocal Band.
Gather Vocal Band.
Boy, that raises a whole bunch of issues. First of all, you got the germ down on his knees, you know, when this healing comes. And then you have this song that says, well, you got to want to be well. Do you want to be free? You got to want to be free. And so it kind of raises an interesting question we might want to look at this evening about.
You know, I once heard, if you really want something, you can have it. And the really was like, it felt like it was putting out lots of sparks. Like, you know, like they have in animated things.
Right,
you know,
it was a sparkling really.
It was a sparkling really. So you pay attention. You really want something.
Right.
And it's really interesting how, you know, when you think about certain things, wanting something means you have to do some things because you have it. Like you want a house, you know. Well, then you have to take care of the house. You have to do this. You want a man in your life. Well, you have to really, you know, the women who say, I want a man, I want a man. But once you have that man, you have to deal with the man. I mean, all of a sudden, you're not by yourself anymore. There's a whole lot of stuff that has to go on. So people have to realize that, and that's why they usually don't have it, because they don't want the stuff that goes with it. They want the illusion of it or the image of it rather than the reality of it.
Wow. Well, that certainly triggered a response. Thank you, for Rochelle. What struck with me, though, was sparkling really. And the more I think about it, have you had your sparkling really today? Because if not, get one soon. You can get it just by, well, the practice is, according to Yeshua's innocent perception. See everything brand new, and the day you'll be flooded with sparkling realies. Really? Really?
Oh, sparkling really.
Really?
That's
really?
Your innocence.
Really?
Well, all of you showed up tonight. You know, you brought your innocence with you.
Really?
So really?
Really?
You should have a good time. You have a sparkling really.
Really? Really?
Really?
Really? Boy, you can just do so much with that concept.
You just already did it.
Right.
But you can do more.
Really?
Yes. Absolutely really.
Yeah, getting over the sickness and despair. When my body goes into depression, my emotions and psyche just thinks like, well, let's just go right along with it.
We don't want you to be left alone.
Right, right. It's like, wait a minute, let me catch up. And my whole system, you know, I get suicidal. I get, everything becomes dark and morose, and things that, you know, 24 hours ago made me go, oh, really? Now are making me go, why bother?
Yeah.
It just totally sucks at least my energy in. And that's where being mindful that is so comes in handy. It doesn't necessarily mitigate the actual pain of the ennui that sets in. It's still there. Everything is dark. But at least there's a part of the mind that's outside of it going, this too shall pass.
Yeah. For me, it's like there's my body, you know, feeling so under the weather. I can really understand that picture, under the weather. You know, there's the weather and you're underneath it.
Right.
And so I can feel myself be above it very often during the day, that I'm not my body. that I am in my body, and the body I'm in is having a little bit of difficulty, you know, being a good body. It's having difficulty because it has an illness. It has been besieged by those little germs, that little germ whose sole purpose is to make me feel like yuck, and it succeeds.
One of the things that we've talked about and studied over the years is A Course in Miracles. And A Course in Miracles has a radical perspective. It talks about how all this is an illusion. It's the body's, everything's an illusion. And what I want to say back to the Course in Miracles, as much as I've found it valuable, is that if you look at the human body, just as one example, it's the illusion is incredibly complicated, and there's billions of things going on of all kinds, biologically and chemically and electronically and
mentally.
Everything. I mean, it's a dynamic, action-central illusion.
Yeah, and when, you know what, I think be in the world but not of it, I always feel like it applies to the body, be in the body but not of it. You know, be in it, you know, this is my body, this is what it's going through, but it's not me, it's not, I'm not it, I'm in it, but I'm not of it. And that's where I get freedom sometimes, you know, even though, I guess one comes back to my practice of not resisting it. I have a cold. I'm just not going to resist it. I'm just being with it. You know, let it tell me how to solve it and make it feel better, and take lots of liquids, sleep a lot, all that stuff. It really works, actually. So I'm doing that. And at the same time, I have this wonderful awareness that it's not a permanent thing. Now, people are in pain lots of times, and it's permanent. Permanent unto death is what I mean. You know, it's like they're going to hurt until they die. And that doesn't make me feel too good, but... Well, oh, God, I got really morose just then, didn't I? Didn't mean to do that.
It really is about healing. It's about getting the healing done, mm-hmm. If you think about it.
Down on the Lincoln Road, baby, there together we must go, till we get the healing done. Till we get the healing done. Till you're satisfied with your life. Till you're satisfied with your life. Till you're satisfied with your life. And it's running right. Till we get, till we get. And it's running right. Till you deal with the poison inside. Sometimes you got to sit down and cry. When you deal with the poison inside, till we get the healing done. Till we get the healing done. Tangle up your spine till you're satisfied in your mind. Till you feel it tangle up your spine. Get the healing done. Till we get, till we get the healing done. Till you live in the glory of the one. Till you live in the land of the sun. Till you feel like your life has just begun. Till we get the healing done. Till we get, till we
Van the Man Morrison. Thank you.
Van the Man Morrison.
Till we get the healing done. I'm beginning to see a kind of a thread emerging tonight in what's showing up about healing, about making a decision. It's our, to what degree is it our choice? How much of it is real? How much of it is an illusion? And most importantly, how much of it is funny?
Well, it's all funny.
Exactly. Everything has the potential to be funny.
Yes, it does. You know, and I think it's not, because we take everything seriously, and not only that, we make things sacred. The sacred cannot be funny. And
not anymore.
No, that's it. The sacred cannot be funny. So the minute you're funny, you're irreverent, in a sense. And that's the humor, is usually in its irreverence, when we find the humor in that which seems to be sacred. Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, they hosted the Golden Globes.
Oh, yes.
Which just happened last weekend, which was 2 days ago. And they said they had made fun of the situation that Bill Cosby is facing, you know, being accused of kind of doping all these women and having sex with them.
No.
The thing is, if they were doped, how did they know he was having sex with them?
Yeah, it could have been a guy in disguise. Could have been a Bill Cosby lookalike.
We don't know, but whatever the thing is, they said they created humor from that. And the person who wrote about it said, it's amazing that they could make humor out of it, you know, because for most people it's like, have very heavy opinions about it one way or the other, and those opinions are sacred. So to make fun of one's opinion, you know, is like pushing the thing. And because we hold on to our opinions, we identify with them, we say, I am my opinion. I and my opinion are one.
Sacred opinions. That is almost as good as sparkling reallys. Sacred opinions. Friends, let me ask you, do you have a sacred opinion? Call in. What's the number, Rochelle?
It's 888-627-6008. I will say it again. 888-627-6008.
Okay.
Now, if you want me to say it again, please call and ask.
Thank you. No, here's the deal. If you've got a sacred opinion, that would be so great. Call in, and they'll let you know you're there waiting to talk to us. Sacred opinion is like, this is non-negotiable. You know, this is what is so. This is where the buck stops. This is how it is. This is the way it is and it's going to be. And this is very precise and tight. And it is so precise and tight that I can't even say it anymore because my whole throat is...
You should see him. Our guests who aren't in the room with us, He is turned purple in his face and constricted to the point of oblivion.
But it's so many of these sacred opinions that have dominated and controlled and unfortunately really harmed, really inflicted a lot of harm on humanity and continue.
They are today.
Because like this is what's so and this is right. And yet there's this part of us that wants to be able to steer in, let's call it, a moral direction. And we've struggled with that for years. Some things that were moral in one culture in one time became opposite, immoral. You don't do that. And I'm reading about these time of the Crusades with the Saracens and the Christians and trying to get Jerusalem back out of the hands of the Saracens. And they call them the infidels. And the Saracens call the Christians the barbarians. I think it's so funny. We're going to talk with these barbarians and we're going to have a talk with the infidels? Oh, my God. Yeah. And they're so arbitrary. We just make them up. I see them as kind of like scaffolding on the ladders, little things to hold on to give us a sense of, oh, this is right or this is wrong, and that way I can go this way or that way. And until you get to the point where, you're just in it.
And this book I'm reading, the same as Errol, only I'm reading part two. He's reading part one at this point. Part one is the Crusades. This is all about Richard the Lionhearted. And the second one is when he was held for ransom and what happened during that time and afterwards. But I'm so aware how we create institutions, we create belief systems that keep us separate from each other. And then we hold on to them because we feel safer being separate than we do coming together. And I don't want to say because you're reading it and you haven't gotten to that part yet, so therefore I can't talk about it. But we'll tune in a couple of weeks when we both have read everything and we can talk about this because I really want to talk about these books.
We'll be talking about that right after we'll be talking about you. You with the sacred opinions out there, I know you got them. You're just eager to get up and say, yeah, but, you know, there's the Holocaust, for example. To me, that's like one of the most sacred or any kind of Holocaust that occurs.
Well, genocide. Happens a lot.
It's hard not to have a sacred opinion about something like that because it's like it eats so deeply and cuts so deeply into your soul, and the pain of it is so wretched and so vast and so horrible to contemplate. And you go, I'm not sure you can laugh at that. And yet, they did the producers. Springtime for Hitler.
God bless Mel Brooks.
I mean, really, he did. We laughed at it. That, if you don't know, the show was a movie, and then it became a major Broadway success about these guys trying to create a play that would get investors, but it wouldn't be successful. So they wrote this.
Because they needed to get money.
Right. Anyway.
And until we reach a point where our awareness is so great and we can see the whole so beautifully, these kind of atrocities, I'll call them, against humans become, I mean, it's almost right to rail against them. You know, to not rail against them is to not feel. And so we feel that there may come a point, certainly not in my development yet, where I can look at these atrocities and not rail at them, but just realize that, you know, give those kids a good spanking and put them in the corner and don't let them out till they grow up.
So here's another perspective that I've had over the years as I've contemplated this. When I take a look at something as vast as the Holocaust, and I imagine the millions of people in all the different ways, and I realized that's not what happened. Those were just images in my mind. What I suspect happened is all these millions of individuals, each was having their own experience at that moment in time. That's all that was going on, was each person's individual experience. We only, in hindsight, have these collective observations about the collective. And each person was as they are right now. Every one of these 6 billion, it's interesting that it was, how many million? 6 million Jews. Now there's 6 billion of us on this planet and counting. And each of us right now is in some level of pain or anguish or despair or joy or happy or domination or victim, and it's all the same. It's just, it's happening at an individual level. So in that sense, it's all the Holocaust, all of life, and it's all the sacred, joyful abundance, all of life, because life is actually only experienced individually, not in this collective evaluative perspective from the future to back to the past,
right?
But my own experience, and each person has their own experience.
Yes, and I totally agree with you. I think that the horrificness of something like genocide happens in our mind because someone or a collective of someones choose to take another someone or a group of someones and inflict torture, pain, and death upon them. And that's like a decision that brings that about. Like the tsunami, no one was sitting there going, okay, let's wipe out all those cities and all those people and kill them right away by creating an earthquake and boom, goodbye.
But no, we haven't had that conversation with the tsunami gods.
Right. But here, this is like, so because it has a sense of volition to it, I think is what makes it feel horrific.
Not just volition, but consciousness itself. It's consciously undertaken. Where did I read once that you could be cruel out of a sense of righteousness because you have this hate and loathing, but you also have some kind of justification in your belief system for the hate and loathing, which allows you to act on it and become cruel. Mm-hmm. They deserve this cruel treatment.
Right. And right now this is still happening. I mean, you know, what we call the terrorists, the reason people are so terrified is that there are human beings right now who are calculating how to hurt somebody.
Or just out of control, which is what they all have in common, whether it's calculated or whether it's domestic abuse and spontaneous emotional, perhaps driven by alcoholism or whatever, harmful ways of treating one another. But I don't want to be like a paint a panacea, but I do want to argue from the position of, well, faith and awareness. And the more we can abide in that, that we can realize that actually all will be well and all is well. And so, lest we take it down.
The new day dawns and I am practicing my purpose once again. It is fresh and it is fruitful if I win, but if I lose, ooh, I don't know. I'll be tired, but I will turn and I will go. Only guessing till I get there, then I'll know. Oh, I will know. All the children walking home past the factories can see the light that's shining in my windows. I'll write this song to you. All will be well. You can ask me how, but only time will tell. The winter's cold, but the snow still lightly settles on the trees. And a mess is still the moment I can seize until I know that all will be well. Even though sometimes this is hard to tell, and the fight is just as frustrating as hell. All will be well. All the children walking home past the factories can see the light that's shining in my windows. I'll write this song to you. And all the cars run.
running fast along the interstate. Feel of the radiance, illuminating what I know is true. All will be well, even after all the promises you've broken to yourself. All will be well. You can ask me how, but only time will tell. Don't give up and chase your dreams, and you will find all in time. All the children walking home past the factories can see the light that's shining in their windows. I write this song to them. All the cars running fast along the interstate. Feel the love that radiates, illuminating what I know is true. And all will be well, even after all the promises you've broken to yourself. All will be well, you can ask me how, but only time will tell.
All will be well, even after all the promises you've broken to yourself, by the Gabe Dixon Band. I think if we're honest with ourselves, there's going to be some level of self-misgiving or having broken promises to ourselves. And I think that's an important thing to resolve in life before you exit it, and that is to forgive yourself for letting you down. Some people may not feel that. They may feel like their self has just been on the money the whole time, coming through, being exactly as you'd hoping yourself would be. And then there's the rest of us who kind of look at a self that has often not lived up to my vision. I'm reminded of a perspective by Krishnamurti. He sort of challenged the whole notion of having some kind of ideal about anything, because, you know, you'll never live up to it, and it just creates a schism, and it's precisely the opposite of schism that we're trying to realize, which is unified awareness.
Right. You know, I was thinking about... I know that you can be the best lover in the world, and someone or some group will want to hurt you, you know, and that people want to hurt people that frighten them. We want to hurt the things that scare us. For whatever reason, we make something frightening. And it could be, if we don't feel good about ourselves and somebody casts loving looks at us, you know, what are you looking at, you know, and the next thing you know, you hit them. it was like, I was on a train in New York City once, and there was... about four or five girls who happened to be black, but I don't think it would have mattered. And they were kind of kidding around with each other, and they were really cute. I mean, they were like horsing around, you know, playing with each other. And I was watching them, and I found it quite delightful, and I was smiling. And then one of them said to me, "What are you smiling at?" And I said, "Well, you're really, you know, I just kind of indicated that they were nice or something like that." And then they left the train in the station, and I had this feeling that they hadn't quite left, you know, that they were still there. And before the door closed, one of the girls hit me in the face, and then the door closed. So I couldn't get up or do anything about it, but she really hit me in the face. And I was so shocked, and I started to cry because I felt it was so undeserved. You know, all I was doing was enjoying them. And she had an attitude that I was like not being, you know, that I shouldn't have been looking at her.
Of course, you don't know what her attitude was.
No, I don't. But that's, you know, what are you looking at was the words that came before the slap. And there was this sense of injustice around that for me, which caused me to cry. And I think that I remember reading that injustice... or justice is the first sense of love that we experience, you know, a sense of justice. And to me, when you're young, well, I wasn't that young. I mean, I was in my early 20s, but I experienced that sense of injustice. And I think of all those things that we talk about, you know, like genocides. It's an injustice. I mean, why would one group of people want to destroy another group of people and blatantly hurt them and make them disfigure them and do horrible things to them? It's unjust. And it defies our sense of love. It defies our sense of care.
It brings me to mind of the whole idea of we have a just God, like justice, let God be just. And you talked about it's the first stage of love, justice. Mm-hmm. And it's balancing the scales when you think about the symbol of justice, the woman who's blind, you know, her mm-hmm. eyes are covered, and she's got the scale, and there's mm-hmm. this sense of balance. And I think it really is characteristic of a fairly early stage of evolution that a civilization is dealing with justice. And that's very much where we are and where we've been for, I don't know, a couple thousand years, probably 2,000-3,000 years. If you look at the broad span of human development, this has been the period of establishing justice or attempting to establish mm-hmm. justice. And you think of all the activity in the court systems and the crimes and laws and everything about laws and legality and governments and trying to manage and monitor all this disharmony and confusion and disturbance that is so characteristic of civilization in its effort to find its way, as I've come to appreciate it, to an ever more perfect union. Though that is, as we've talked about in this show before, the first mission of the United States of America to form a more perfect union, I also believe it is essentially evolution's mission, is to ever form a more perfect union. And that perfection comes out of these dichotomies, these forces that are so polarized to the point where they could annihilate each other, all the way down to somebody who kids somebody else, a kid that'll kid a friend, you know, poke him in the side. It's a little bit of torture, not a lot, it's tickling, all the way up to genocide. And so,
what do you mean, kick him in the side?
Oh, I guess it wasn't a good analogy.
No, come up with a better one, because I think I know what you're speaking
well,
about.
Well, speak of it then.
Well, when taunting,
yeah,
kids yeah. taunting each other.
Thank you.
And being kind of cruel and bullying mm-hmm. or something like that.
Right.
Where they take advantage of someone who's maybe smaller than they are or but more thoughtful. You know, like the kids will bully. Most of the more thoughtful kids get bullied in schools. You know, ones who watch, and like I did, I was watching this. I was physically watching these women. And I needed to be reprimanded for just watching them. And I had thought involved in my watching them, a thought of delight, though. But, oh, well, that happened a long time ago, but it's still...
It rankles.
It still has a place in me that, you know, where it was unjust and hurt.
Unjust rankling.
Yeah.
That can go with our earlier products. Unjust rankling. Sparkling really.
Salesman in you
and what was the other one?
Hiatus. You're going to sell hiatuses.
Well.
It's sort of like indulgences. You're going to sell indulgences.
Someone said to me the other day, one of my neighbors, he said, when you first got here, I thought of you as a, what was it, self-promoting opportunist. And when he said that, I thought, you know, yeah, I just not a very good one. And I realized that based upon how I am and some of the ways I've behaved, I could see how someone would regard me as a self-promoting opportunist. And I think it's because I have felt so inadequate to make my writing, my work, my art available. I've often identified with Van Gogh. and his frustration in getting his paintings out. And as I understand it, he did not sell one single painting before he died. He had his brother Theo, who was supposed to try and help him, but it just didn't happen. And then there was that ear thing, but we won't go into that. But I've identified with Van Gogh to the extent that I, as an artist, you know, I feel like I have this body of work, and it's just, it's taken a hiatus. That's what it's done.
You've sold a lot of it, though, a lot more than Van Gogh.
Anyway, but I think that's also part of the challenge, is how do you bring about your dreams? How do you make your dreams come true? Well, one dream certainly has come true for Rochelle and I. And that's the dream of being on a radio and doing this radio show with you. And it makes us happy, and we think of it as happy, happy radio. What can I tell you? Happy, happy to be on the radio.
An automatic alarm turns my radio on. Before my feet and the hip the floor, the music got me ready to go. And all through the whole day, I know my favorite records to play. It helps me chase all my blues away. When I can hear that DJ say, that's the station, AJPP Rock. We play the hell, your day goes by. I said it's the musical, natural high. Woo! On station AJPP in my car. I have the radio is never too far. I just reach out my hand, turn it down, and I know it will make me stop. I'll just the station. Hey, 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 hey,
HAPPY Radio by Edwin Starr. STARR. Thank you, Edwin, for reminding us that at any moment we can pop into the now. You can never be late for the now.
No, you can never be late for the now. That's the nicest thing about the now.
Yeah. No, it doesn't matter. So you never have to feel guilty when you get there, ever, because you're never late. So this is a way to take away guilt.
Yes, just be here now.
Yeah.
Well, the nice thing about being here now, which I am right now here, is I love the happy radio, HAPPY, happy radio. I think that's funny. I think that also I feel, what's the word? I feel very uncold-like right this minute because I'm having a good time.
Well, we're animated, our body juices are going. Let me ask you, listeners, as you're listening to our show, Inside Out, The Naked Truth, are the juices moving freely and excitedly through your body? Are the impulses that are coming from the energy that hits your body and as it triggers chemical reactions, which in turn send electrical impulses to your brain, which causes you to respond in tingling in other very sensational ways throughout your body as you live and move throughout your day? Are you feeling the vibratory excitement of zillions of neurons moving about going, say, what do you think? And the other one going, yeah, I like that. Give me that. That'd be good.
H-A-P-P-Y.
H-A-P-P-Y. Because if you're not,
Take a hiatus.
Take a hiatus from what you are doing.
And two cups of water.
Yeah, and get some sparkling reelies in your life. They just really are. Really? Yeah.
I think that, you know, I remember the realization that when I am so present to the moment that I'm in, present to a person that I'm in, engaged is the best way I can think of it.
Engaged.
Engaged, fully engaged, that whatever is troubling somehow disappears, because in the engagement, the trouble is not there. The trouble seems to be a product of my projections into the future of this moment, taking it with me forever, or going into the past and remembering how horrible it was yesterday.
It's like you don't have to drag your past along with you. It'll come along on its own.
That's true. That's really true. Absolutely. You don't even have to feed it.
No. And your past, it's really the unresolved past, the unrequited past, more specifically and precisely, unforgiven past, that keeps trying to grab onto us and manipulate what happens in the future so that the past in the future will be resolved. I mean, that's crazy, right? That is crazy.
Exactly, because it's impossible.
It's impossible, but that's why the forgiveness is a requirement in becoming aware, because as long as there's this unrequited piece of past back there going and saying things like, yeah, but, it's like a yeah, but. It's its whole thing, various levels of pain of yeah, butting. Yeah, but if it was like, it's uptight. God. It's very uptight.
Yeah, it was. It was exhausting just watching you go through that.
Well, but I think that kind of unresolved past is having its effect on us all the time. And I would say it's probably a major contributor to our early demise. You know, we were scheduled to live 400 years, each of us, you know, when I looked it up.
Who scheduled this?
Well, I looked up the pre-life scheduling thing, and most everybody here was scheduled for, you know, 3, 4, sometimes as many as 500 years. I mean, it's not. But everybody also has a choice, you know.
I was talking to some young women today. We're talking about problems and the solving of those problems. And I think that we don't take responsibility for a problem, and the minute we do take responsibility for and can forgive ourselves of being human and having a problem in our lives at all, the answers to solving those problems can be seen. They can be heard. They can be detected.
And that's a time for celebration.
That's a time.
So let's do celebrate it.
Okay.
Right now.
I'll celebrate it
with
you.
With the health to your company. Here we go.
Kind of friends and companions, come join me in rhyme. Come lift up your voices in chorus with mine. Come lift up your voices, all grief to refrain. For we may or might never all meet here again. So here's a health to their company, and one to my lass. Let's drink and be merry, all out of one glass. Let's drink and be merry, all grief to refrain. For we may or might never all meet here again. Here's a health to the wee lass that I love so well. For style and for beauty there's none can excel. There's a smile on her countenance as she sits upon my knee. There is no man in this wide world as happy as me. So here's a health to their company, and one to my lass. Let's drink and be merry, all out of one glass. Let's drink and be merry, or grief to refrain. For we may or might never all meet here again. Our ship lies at anchor, she's ready to dock. I wish her safe landing without any shock. And if ever I should meet you by land or by sea, I will always remember your kindness to me. So here's a health to the company and one to my lass. Let's drink and be merry, all out of one glass. Let's drink and be merry, all grief to refrain. For we may or might never all meet here again.
That's a good reason to be merry and appreciate the presence, because we might never meet here again. That was the chieftains.
Wow.
Here's a health to the company. And it's a good thing to be reminded of. And that's what I feel like we do, and we invite you to join us on Tuesday nights here at Inside Out Naked Truth, is to, in our own way, drink a health to the company. And just as an aside, I want to thank those Irish songwriters and Scottish songwriters, because I'd say 50% of their songs that talk about whiskey or drinking. It's if you listen to them,
they know how to celebrate it.
They know how to celebrate there, the Irish and the Scottish there, people there.
I think it's all the celebrating that makes us have a cold after the holidays.
Aye, the celebrating after the
all
cold.
All the carbs and all the whiskey and wine.
And chocolate, dear. How much chocolate did you eat during that time?
What do you mean? I'm still eating it.
We're still eating the chocolate. And speaking of eating chocolate, we're going to have to begin moving our time away from, you know. And happy that you could be with us now for the past year. And we're starting year two with this wonderful station. And my beautiful bride here looking at me going, hey, for a guy, you're sure looking like a guy.
Well, remember.
Wait a minute. So come check us out, eastrider@gmail.com, if you want to have a conversation. And go to our website, thelaughinghearth.org, and buy Go Raw food. Okay, here you go. What do we have to remember, Rochelle?
Remember, resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more. Good night. Thank you.